Hey everybody, welcome back to the end of one of the biggest weeks so far this year, I think. And so why not have Brett Ehrlich join us for this Friday show? Brett Ehrlich, how's it going?
It's been a minute. I haven't been on the show in 2 weeks, and now I'm on the show, and I don't know what else to say other than you should watch Happy Half Hour on TYT Network. Tonight, we have Jeremy Ray Taylor from IT.
Yeah.
Great
young actor.
Great young actor. I literally, while watching IT, said out loud to my wife, I love him.
He was really good.
He's so amazing.
And he has like a gravitas beyond his years.
And that comes out during the show where we eat bugs and talk about monsters that might be real.
And also video games.
Yeah. And also Fortnite.
Yeah, you know they used to have that expression that like, she's the IT girl. He's the IT boy,
yeah,
I think.
And he's got Are You Afraid of the Dark coming out on Nickelodeon.
So that is 100% true. So aside from that, we have a lot that we're going to get to today. There's going to be a little bit, I'm going to warn you, about impeachment, just a little. So what's going on inside of the White House? What is their strategy? How are they reacting to what's going on? There's new insider accounts. What is Fox News' strategy? We got an idea of it earlier this week with the brewing feud between Shep Smith and Tucker Carlson. Fox News has chosen a side on that. We're gonna reveal that to you a little bit later on. We've also got two awesome guests who are gonna join us. So congressional candidate Jose Caballero is gonna join us to talk about the Green New Deal. And also the proposed limiting of refugees coming into the United States in future years. And closing out the show, David K. Johnson is gonna be joining us once again to talk a little bit about how he thinks politically and in terms of the investigation, how impeachment could play out over the course of the rest of this year. So with that, why don't we jump into it?
I'm so excited that Spider-Man's back.
You know what? Let's just talk about that, honestly.
No, John, we can't.
Okay,
there's too much
importance. I really wish that I could. Because that's great news. It's the greatest news. Now, impeachment, number two.
Got it.
Tom Holland, number one. But to be fair, he was already number one. Fair. So anyway, we're gonna jump into non-Tom Holland related news.
Fair enough.
Okay. Breaking news in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I'm kidding, I'm just trying to bother the people in the control room. So how is the White House dealing with all of this impeachment talk? There's some leaks, you know? There's always leaks. And so we're getting an idea of how they're reacting to this. We also know way out in front of that how Donald Trump is reacting, because he has been tweeting nonstop about this. A perfectly normal tweet, all caps, it was a perfect conversation with Ukraine president. That's the whole tweet, all caps.
That sounds like it's translated from Ukrainian.
Yes. No, like you translate it to Ukrainian and back. You did that 10 times. There were quotation marks around it. Who's he quoting? Himself, presumably.
Like, this guy is such a nightmare.
He is.
That is not a perfect conversation with the Ukraine president. A perfect conversation with the Ukraine president is like he tells you some kind of awesome secret and you're having a good time. Mm-hmm. And like he tells you like a recipe for the perfect version of like chicken Kiev.
Mm-hmm. That would be good, yeah. And look, to some extent, I'm showing you that tweet because it's fun. The other is, there is this idea out there that the Dems have walked into his trap.
No.
So we have to evaluate the evidence. Is this a person who has sprung a trap on his greatest political foes? Mm-mm. It was a perfect conversation with the Ukrainian president. Maybe that's consistent,
no.
But it doesn't seem to be to me.
It doesn't make any sense, because a lot of people try to point to like this idea that the Republican impeachment of Trump, of Clinton backfired on them, but no, they did better in the next election afterwards.
Exactly.
Like, it's not true that impeachment backfires. And that's exactly what Trump would say in this situation. And forget about what he says. Mm-hmm. Just everything that he has done has just incriminated himself. Like, he admitted to a crime and then gave us proof of the crime. And while this is all unfolding, and as we talk about like the subtle nuances of this and the breaking news that develops after, just remember, the president has committed a crime and the president has admitted to it.
Yes.
The law says you cannot solicit a thing of value from a foreign actor. And that's precisely what he does pretty much 8 times in a phone call that we have like the visual written proof of.
Yeah,
so
that he provided, not the whistleblower.
That he said here, he solicits a thing of value for his campaign. And then we'll get through all the ways that the White House is defending it. And each one is so laughably ridiculous. Like, when I watch a lot of cable news and people are from the Republican side start giving their arguments. Frequently, there's a time where I'm like, ah, dang, that's gonna win people over. Mm-hmm. It's stupid, but it'll win people over. I haven't had that moment yet.
Oh, well, buckle up, because okay. It's coming right now. I'm gonna skip the next two tweets. He basically says he wants Adam Schiff to resign from Congress. Get in line, buddy. But anyway, no, so he has a new argument that's gonna win people over. He says, to show you how dishonest the lamestream media is, I use the word little, not little, in describing, incorrectly spelled, corrupt Congressman Little Adam Schiff. Low-rating CNN purposefully took the hyphen out, hyphen, and said I spelled the word little wrong. A small but never-ending situation with CNN. It's a small but never-ending situation, but not with CNN.
That I'm
you are crazy.
That was nuts. That didn't make any sense.
Here's the thing, that's nuts, but we will go crazy if we dwell on it. So let's move to the insider accounts of the White House, and we'll let the country deal with the fact that he both doesn't know what a hyphen is, and also that's how he speaks about people.
See that you do.
So anyway, this is according to NBC News. One source familiar with the situation described the sense of total panic over the past week at the lack of a plan to address the new reality. Again, factor that into your evaluation of whether this was a trap carefully sprung, that they have no plan for what happens now. Also, there appears to be a rising, quote, anxiety, unease, and concern, as one person close to the White House described the mood in the West Wing, that the whistleblower's allegations could seriously wound the president and some of those around him. Quote, there's not a lot of confidence that there's no there. And I always love getting the official White House talking points and then getting literally the points they're talking about days afterward.
Right, exactly.
They don't always line up.
It's so simple. Like there was a crime. Mm-hmm. Now the whistleblower report says that there is essentially a cover up, mm-hmm. that they knew that what they were doing was wrong. They went and tried to hide. And not just this, but multiple phone calls on a server.
Yeah.
But precisely, like, people wonder, oh, you just hate the president. Oh, you guys just hate the president, you'll find anything. It's like, mm-hmm. no, the reason, yes, I do severely dislike this president. Mm-hmm. But the reason I don't want him in charge of stuff is precisely things like this.
Yes.
It's the mental state of a child saying, like, not even going back when that little tweet that we just heard, but just the idea that, like, one of the defenses that the Trump team is trotting out is, and this happened on CNN multiple times yesterday with Republicans saying, hey, what's wrong with the president calling someone in Ukraine to root out corruption?
Mm-hmm.
That's their line,
mm-hmm.
root out corruption. And then there was another person who said, oh, anything could be a thing of value if you're a politician, because everything you do makes it more or less likely that you'll get elected.
Mm-hmm.
But
some things more directly so.
But that's the difference, is like the fundamental premise of democratic representation is I do things that are good for the public,
yes.
for the voters. And what I get back in return is their vote. But that's what democracy is.
Yeah.
That is the representative representing the people.
Yeah.
In this situation, Trump is not doing, he's not soliciting things that benefit the voters. He's in asking to investigate his political opponent. He's asking for stuff that benefits him personally. Yeah. One is the fundamental premise of democracy, mm-hmm. what I described before. And the other is the fundamental premise of corruption.
Yeah.
And corruption is using your position of power to benefit you.
Yourself.
And when it comes to whether this is a crime, is there a quid pro quo? Incidentally, yes, there is a crime. Mm-hmm. This is a crime. But for impeachment to happen, it doesn't need to be a crime.
According to Lindsey Graham.
According to Lindsey Graham himself, with whom I agree. Because we can't really, we just went through a whole probe where we can't crime a president.
Mm-hmm.
Like the fundamental premise of that. We can't crime Trump. So we come back to the thing I said at the beginning of this, which is the reason I don't want Trump to be president. It's because he does stuff like this.
Mm-hmm.
Whether he knew this was a crime, that's another thing. It's like, essentially, the president's an idiot. He doesn't know what the law is. He's mm-hmm. ignorant at the very best. But okay, fine. I don't need him to know it was a crime or not.
Except, but he definitely does.
He definitely does.
I mean, first he got one free already. And that call came within like a couple of days of Robert Mueller's testimony. It was sort of in the news at the time, this whole idea of using the assistance of a foreign power to help you in your election. He should have been able to hold on to that knowledge for 72 hours.
He should have been able to hold on to that knowledge. But even if it's the case that he just didn't learn that, and that's just Trump being Trump. Mm-hmm. The reason we have these laws that you can't solicit a thing of value from a foreign actor is because we don't, for your campaign, mm-hmm. is that we don't want corrupt behavior. Yeah. And Trump is corrupt behavior. So whether he had the mens rea, as it called, like the intent essentially to commit a crime or not, he has the mens diarrhea of just being an idiot, and he will do stuff like this. And people try to protect him, the White House tries to protect him. And
I just love that we've been working to that for 10 minutes or so now. I like it though.
I just came up with it on the spot.
But we're tweeting that.
But men's diarrhea. Good.
That's pretty good. I 100% agree with what you're saying. We're going to have more on a few different aspects of this as we continue, but we have to take a break because congressional candidate Jose Caballero is going to be joining us after the break to talk about a couple important topics. We'll see you on then.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, "You must unlearn what you have learned." And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Over the past decade or so, as a number of different migrant crises have developed, at no point have the number of refugees brought into the US been sufficient considering the demand. That was true under Donald Trump, it was true under Barack Obama as well, but the number has been plummeting under the Trump administration. Last year, the administration capped the number of refugees allowed in at 30,000, a significant reduction from previous years, and far fewer than the 110,000 allowed in the final year of the Obama administration. But now, even that 30,000 is going to look pretty significant because the newly announced cap is just 18,000. We're looking at 15% of what it was at just a couple of years ago. And already millions of climate-related refugees so far this year, let alone from other conflicts around the globe. And so with that situation, we're joined now by congressional candidate for California's 53rd District, Jose Caballero. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
I'm glad to have you here. So this number is going down really fast. We're letting in barely anyone on a national scale. What's your reaction to this announcement?
Well, it's more of the same from the Donald Trump administration. It's not surprising at all that he is continuing to manufacture this border crisis over and over again. And what he does is he makes it worse. It's like, you know, setting a fire and saying, look at the fire. And you know, when I don't even think 110,000 was enough originally, and now that we're down to 18,000, it's disturbing. It's basically just shutting our door at this point because it's so, like you said, it's an insignificant number at this point.
Exactly, and you know, this feels to me like it's tied into the sort of political philosophy of Trump, where his fans will see this as America being first. Like, this is how you show your devotion to America, by, you know, barring people from coming in. You are, of course, a vet. You've shown that devotion in a slightly different way. If you were in elected office right now, you know, you couldn't single-handedly change this policy. Right. But what would you be doing to try to change the priorities in this area?
Well, I would basically go on the media and scream about how horrible this is, that it's actually going against the framework of what this country was founded on. The fact that, you know, I fought for this country so people could be free here, and that includes people who want to find a better life here. Like that Statue of Liberty says, send us our poor, send us our huddled masses, right? Like, these are the things that we are supposed to be doing. So Trump is only keeping one campaign promise at this point, which is, I'm going to shut the borders. The country is full, he likes to say. Well, the country isn't full, and it's not even close to that. So the fact that he continues to do this. So what would I do? I would make sure that we would get a coalition of people, especially here in San Diego, considering the fact that we are a border town here, and say, look, this is not a problem that it says. I live in San Diego every day, and I do not see massive amount of crime and drug use from migrants at all. So this is a complete distraction, and we need to make sure that the country knows that.
Yeah, we should also put this in context. Earlier this month, the Supreme Court agreed with the administration, allowed them to deny asylum to refugees crossing through Mexico, sort of putting the onus on Mexico first to deal with the situation. So this is a decision that is also being combined with other policy changes by the Trump administration to massively limit the ability of people to, for instance, apply for asylum here. In a larger sense, I know people are gonna try to directly respond to what Trump is doing, but assuming that things change, that 2020, you know, maybe the Dems take over the White House, have more influence in the Congress. What are some of the sort of positive ideas that the Dems could be putting forward in this area to fix the situation?
Well, first, we need to make sure that, you know, we get all of our DACA recipients legalized right away and get them citizenship. That will set a tone in this country that will say, look, that immigrants are welcome here, and that we need to basically uphold our citizens as they come into this country and not push them down. We need to go back and increase those caps on the what Trump just lowered as far as the refugees. We need to bring more administrators to the border and actually make sure that there's people to intake the amount of people that are coming in, and making sure that they're brought in safely and not held in detention. We need to ban private prisons, because private prisons are the ones that are making profits from detention facilities on the border. We need to make sure that we do not allow the policy of separating children at the family as a deterrent for people to come in this country. Those are just a few things that we need to do to change the way that we govern in this country. And as long as we create those laws, I believe that the court systems will follow suit as well, especially once Trump is out of office, hopefully sooner than later, and with a Senate and a House that's controlled by Democrats.
Yeah. Jose, there's another topic I'd like to get your thoughts on. So let's switch it up for just a second. There's this idea that ever since the Green New Deal was announced, there have been people saying that if the Democrats campaign based on this platform, this idea of integrating a response to the climate crisis with a number of other issues of public policy, that it is going to be a massive loser. Obviously on Fox News, the Republicans, they've been saying that. But there are many Democrats as well that are scared of this policy and think that it could lead to the Democrats losing control of the House once again. Well, we've got some new polling showing that that is perhaps not accurate.
That's
specifically
true.
In battleground districts, the support for the Green New Deal is at 49%, the opposition at 35%, and that is in the sort of the middle districts, the districts that are more up for grabs, that hypothetically have a higher percentage of conservatives. We're not talking about like hard blue districts here.
Right.
Jose, you're running in a district that is not overwhelmingly Democratic. What do you think about campaigning based on the Green New Deal?
Well, I've been doing it since the beginning, and that type of pressure has been very effective. And these polling numbers only confirm what we all thought, that climate, healthcare, education, these are real kitchen table issues that people are now starting to talk about. The fact that I thought was really great about that poll is that only 4% didn't know, which really shows that the message has gotten out to the voters as a whole, and people actually have an opinion. So when you talk about what's going on with the climate, the fires, the ice melting, the Amazon rainforest, the African fires, people are really starting to get scared. They want people who are going to be bold on policy, because I think people are tired of this media narrative that says, oh, this is too expensive, this isn't going to work. Well, what else have we got to do left? And I think people are really starting to reach that critical mass that says, if we don't deal with our climate, we're all dead. And I think that narrative has really gotten into the general public, and they want politicians that are going to stand up and say, I'm not only going to fight for the Green New Deal, I'm also going to create policies for that framework.
We should also acknowledge that today, in a number of different cities around the world, the second iteration of the climate strike from last Friday as well.
That's right.
That's going on right now. So a lot of people, thanks to the leadership of a number of different primarily youth climate-based activist organizations, are talking about it. In terms of the talk about the Green New Deal, there's a little bit more from that poll that I want to show people. So what has the respondent heard about the Green New Deal? Positive, negative, and how much of each? And here is the biggest challenge, I think. Remember, it's still polling much more positive than negative in battleground districts, despite the fact that people have heard a lot, according to them, more negative information about the Green New Deal. Far, far more negative than positive, probably because Fox News has talked more about the Green New Deal this year than CNN and MSNBC combined, I think likely. So right. I guess the onus is really on us to get the information out there. What are some of the points that you try to stress when you're talking about the Green New Deal?
Well, the points that I try to stress is the fact that we bring it back to what's actually happening right now on the ground, right? You have the fires, and like I said, the ice caps are melting. We also need to stress the fact that if we do not actually use our resources to prevent the climate crisis that is happening right now, or at least mitigate it to some degree, we are going to be paying so much more money in coastal cities going underwater. Here in San Diego, like if we go up several feet, like we're going to lose a lot of beaches, mm-hmm. beachfront property, and people are starting to see that. Another talking point that we have here in San Diego and California as a whole is the fact that the fires are becoming such a huge problem that insurance companies are no longer covering for fire protection. And if they do, they're charging five times what the normal rate is. So even if you're an affluent person who owns a home in, let's say, you know, an area that's prone to fire, then you may be hurt and lose everything because your insurance company isn't going to cover you in housing yeah. insurance anymore. So there's a lot of issues and points on cost of what the climate crisis is costing America that is really ringing true to a lot of our voters.
Well, yeah, 100%. Jose Caballero, a congressional candidate in California's 53rd district. Thank you, as always, for joining us.
Thank you so much for your time.
I want to take a short break here. We come back, Fox News. They're trying to walk a very careful line here on this impeachment thing. We're going to break down a little bit of their strategy after this. This week, as more and more has been coming out about the Ukraine scandal, the possible impeachment of the president, Fox News has been trying to figure out their strategy. And to me, it seems a little bit like how they used to talk about mullets. It's like confidence in front of the camera, anxiety behind it. I want to show you both parts of that. First, here's how some hosts are talking about it on their shows.
He's a real estate guy, and it was filled with braggadocio. I could just see him.
Sales.
And that's that phone call to the Ukrainian president reminded me of him selling a real estate building
like
someplace.
Let us
we do this. And right. By the way, you do that. And I could just see him in the stream of consciousness.
Of
hey, Zell, what's up, buddy?
Geraldo.
So that's Geraldo. It's first I've heard from him on this topic.
It's so like creepy how like, oh, I could just picture him, you know, the sun bouncing off his golden hair, his beautiful eyes just mm-hmm. fluttering in the night. Like, dude.
Yeah.
You're like, this is creepy. You're kind of like strangely, like you would talk about someone you had a crush on.
Yeah, a little bit. Look, I think he's under a lot of pressure. He's been attacked publicly on social media by the president.
Or like the way you would talk about your dog, like when yeah. he's like peeing on someone else's like car mm-hmm. and just like, oh, look at him. He's just being a dog, yeah. peeing on something. And everyone's like, that's my car.
Yeah. And the thing is, like a criminal behavior doesn't become not criminal because you do this while you're talking about yeah. it, like it's casual or something. And I can shoot someone casually. I'm still going to jail.
Precisely the loosey-goosiness of it, mm-hmm. and the fact that like his like Geraldo's framing of it excuses Trump's wanton corruption.
Yeah,
like that's why
but they're trying.
This is all a mistake, and it is like there's so much spaghetti on the wall at this point, and that's one example of it.
So look, we're gonna have a little bit more from Fox and Friends this morning in a bit, but as I said, behind the cameras, there's a little bit more anxiety going on. So Gabriel Sherman of the Vanity Fair did a great write-up on this with multiple sources inside of Fox News. Apparently this morning, as of yesterday, Sean Hannity told Friends the whistleblower's allegations are, quote, really bad. A person briefed on Hannity's conversations told me Hannity did not respond to a request for comment, shockingly. But yeah, Hannity is just smart enough to know that this looks pretty bad for him. And by the way, also talks to the president. It's possible he has a better idea of how nervous Trump actually is about this. He almost certainly has spoken with him since it broke. But more importantly, perhaps than Sean Hannity, according to four sources, Fox Corporation CEO Lachlan Murdoch is already thinking about how to position the network for a post-Trump future. A person close to Lachlan told me that Fox News has been the highest rated cable network for 17 years and quote, the success has never depended on any one administration. That is fascinating, mainly because here for like the past month, we've been watching the first shots of a war between Trump and Fox. He keeps saying they're not sufficiently deferential to him. Maybe people should go watch OANN. And it was interesting to see how are they going to reassure the president that they are in fact on his side. Behind the scenes, they seem to be getting ready for Trump to transition out.
Right. There's a lot of, it's like this nebulous glob of grifting. Mm-hmm. Because you have, and like who's leading whom, what is responsible for any specific aspect of Fox's success. You could argue that the way Fox has been during previous administrations has created the perfect petri dish of goo to grow Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. You know, like
to get people ready and, for and it,
to get to essentially inspire people to positively reinforce the kind of behavior that Trump will have. They created the monster mm-hmm. in a certain way, and now they're trying to figure out what to do after the monster, but they are still like Dr. Frankenstein, right? Like mm-hmm. they are still the ones who have the creative capability to do whatever they want according to their plan. And I think that I don't see this story and say, oh, this is a huge development. This is just Fox doing what mm-hmm. it's always done, which is plan for any situation and see how it can benefit them to change their editorial control. But their editorial aspect is always the same, whereas there are other journalistic organizations, or there are journalistic organizations out there who say, well, we should lead with the truth. Mm-hmm. And there's others that are like, hey, we should lead with what our corporate sponsors allow us to lead with.
Yeah.
This, with Fox, it is exactly what they say, which is, how do we create that counterpoint to the perceived bias of liberal media? Mm-hmm. And that's what they'll do, no matter what.
Yeah, and that whole thing about prioritizing the truth first is a great exact inverse of that in this in just a sec. One more quote, this is a direct quote from the source. It's management bedlam. This massive thing happened and no one knows how to cover it. But what's interesting is not just that with this information coming out, there's every reason to believe that Trump is going to be attacking them on Twitter again. But that regardless of how they manage this impeachment story and whether they stick with Trump or not, it might be the case that not all of their hosts make it through because feuds are starting to develop. The schism was evident this week as a feud erupted between afternoon anchor Shepard Smith and primetime host Tucker Carlson, which we talked about on the show yesterday. Fox News CEO Suzanne Scott and President Jay Wallace communicated to Smith this morning to stop attacking Carlson, a person briefed on the conversation said. They said if he does it again, he's off the air. So what he had a guest on, Shep did, that implied that Trump looks like he'd committed a crime. Then Carlson had a guest on who said, no, he didn't commit a crime, and also your guest is stupid. And then Shep had that guy back on again to say, nuh-uh, you're stupid. And so out of that, and it is as dumb as I just described it, they're saying, stop attacking Tucker Carlson or you're gone. So they have their straight news person, their opinion person, there's a feud between them, and they're choosing their opinion person there.
Right, but and put that back in the context of OANN, which is this growing, amazingly hilarious Trump den. Mm-hmm. Until that really takes off, there is just Fox News. It is the only game in town. And if we talk about a post-Trump media landscape, it could be the situation where Trump, feeling he's been jilted by Fox News goes and starts his own other television network, that it gets on TV. And the reason that Fox enjoys the success that it does is it's really the only game in town. Mm-hmm. What this could create, if you're looking at what does Fox look like after Trump, it could be Fox with a competitor. Yeah. There could be a great schism. Half of the church could go to another outlet.
And
it seems like we're seeing that the cracks in the foundation beginning.
Yeah, and I know Juan Williams on The Five, he created this uproar because he said that he's hearing White House talking points being said. Very same sentiment from Chris Wallace, who said, the spinning that has been done by the president's defenders over the last 24 hours since this very damaging whistleblower complaint came out, the spinning is astonishing and I think deeply misleading. So look, obviously he is describing Kayleigh McEnany and whatever.
McEnany,
I don't know. But also describing a number of different Fox hosts, especially Sean Hannity. And so for all we know, they're gonna be, you know, spitting back and forth over the weekend in the same way that already Shep Smith and Tucker Carlson have. So I don't know how this is gonna shake out, but as you point out, it could lead to people moving off into their own thing. Something that had been hypothesized a couple of years ago.
And that exact dynamic has a long legacy at Fox News where they literally have given top-down talking points to everyone. Yeah,
exactly. And it appears that that's what we're seeing. Okay, we're gonna take a short break. We come back, more to get to. There was a lot of damaging information that came out in yesterday's release of the whistleblower complaint. One particularly spicy part was the fact that conversations like Trump had with the Ukrainian president were apparently put not in the traditional place where they're kept, but instead a more secure private server. Now that, of course, is ironic considering how much he attacked Hillary Clinton for her private server. So when it comes to the president's greatest defenders, Fox and Friends, they have to cover this news, but they also have to play a game. How much can we talk about this without saying the word server? Let's watch.
This was an indirect account.
Right.
And when you talk about a cover-up, this was put into a place which was cybersecurity secured for extra.
A special computer.
A special computer which was password secured. And you could thoroughly understand the administration wanting to guard against interaction that are important for national security because the Mexican the exchange, that private phone call was leaked. Australia. The Australian private phone call was leaked. There was an editorial written in the New York Times. We still don't know the author of it. Anonymous talked about how bad and chaotic things are behind the scenes. They still don't know who they can trust and who they can't trust.
Keep in mind, the president, there were so many leakers in the beginning of the administration. The president was probably saying, look, something's leaked. I need to file this in a classified repository.
Right, and they started to tighten the security around it. But according to the document that was released yesterday, this is not where they normally put things since then. This was extraordinary, and that's why the cover of the New York Times says complaint asserts a White House cover-up. I mean, this is serious. That's it.
Now, just briefly acknowledge that this is Ducey again being the only one on that show being willing to admit that this could potentially be a big story. So a little bit of credit to Ducey there.
I just imagine like they even go to like Denny's or something and they can't even call their server their server. Do we have the person who is selling me food here?
Yeah. Please. Person with the tray. So really fast, we had a place that was cybersecurity secured. Special computers, computer which was password secured, and a classified repository.
Ew. First of all, those are extremely uncomfortable to insert.
This whole section has become uncomfortable. But say it was a server. That's literally what it is.
They're so afraid of server. By their own behavior, they have made server off limits, even though that's absolutely what it is.
Now, to the substance of what they were saying, to the extent that there was substance, and for once it wasn't about pancakes, as we showed on the show yesterday. So he says that it was all secondhand accounts from the whistleblower. My little pet peeve over the last 48 hours has been how much Trump's defenders, Trump himself, the White House, right-wing media, senators on the right, have been attacking the whistleblower's credibility as if Trump hasn't already admitted to all of this and released a transcript, the fake, it's not actually a transcript, but a memo
of what was in there that already confirms all of what we were worried about. I don't care if it turns out that the whistleblower is a serial killer. They've already admitted to everything important that the whistleblower said.
Yeah, and the only thing remaining to uncover is what else is on the server. Mm-hmm. What else is there? What else are they putting?
What does that word
server,
mean?
Server, server.
It's a repository.
It's the annals of repository.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. We have the crime. We have the crime. He did the crime. We know it's the crime. He said, "Here is proof of my crime." Mm-hmm. Period. Done. Anyone who says otherwise is another. My pet peeve is people. Someone went on, like, I think it was Cuomo last night, and was like, "There are many lawyers who are saying that this behavior is not illegal." Mm-hmm. It's like, listen, everyone who murdered someone is represented by a lawyer who says mm-hmm. they didn't.
That's the system.
That's it. There are lawyers. Mm-hmm. Are you telling me lawyers for money will say they believe something?
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it. That's or the whole job.
Best case scenario, out of a sense of duty to, that's how the system's supposed to work, you get to have a defender.
My other pet peeve about it is, like, there was a Washington Post said how one man single-handedly brought about impeachment. It's like, no, yeah. He is referencing all the folks who came to him or her and said, "Hey, by the way, this is bad." Because mm-hmm. he's talking about a lot of folks. And if you think that's not credible enough, your president isn't even as explicit as this whistleblower's report is. Because he's always like, "Well, a lot of people are saying this, a lot of people." The difference between the way Trump says a lot of people and the way the whistleblower says a lot of people is, like, the whistleblower has a lot of people.
Yeah, and isn't just inventing them. Yeah, and credit to Fox and Friends for trying their, they just had to secure it because other calls, like with Mexico and Australia, those were embarrassing and they were leaked. Okay, that's entirely true. I would say stop being incredibly embarrassing on phone calls, but there's nothing in that transcription of the call that was personally embarrassing towards Trump.
Mm-mm.
It's only the legal implications, which is why not only did they end up hiding it away, but also initially it was revealed. And by the way, they've admitted that they did that. They put it on the server. They've admitted that. When the phone call first happened, it's normally immediately electronically distributed to everyone who needs to have access to it. They didn't do that. They printed out hard copies only and hand delivered them.
And
that's an extraordinary response, not just to protect his ego because he said something wrong.
Yes, because they know what he does is illegal all the time.
Exactly.
And then also in the whistleblower report, one of my favorite moments is the guy who runs the server that kind of protects it for national security reasons, the one who has a server that is just meant to protect national security sensitive material. When they said, "We're going to put this phone call on your server," he was like, "No,
yeah, that's not what's
that's not it." It's like when Daryl and the warehouse people catch Michael trying to use the bailer to, like, it's like, "No, this is not for you. This is not for your little fun personal, like, project. This is a very real mechanism by which to keep people safe."
Yeah, technically, it's a crushing repository.
Yeah.
Anyway, we have to take a break. Come back. David K. Johnson joins us on the other side. There is perhaps no better or more appropriate week of news to be joined by Pulitzer Prize winning investigative journalist, author David K. Johnson. Welcome back to the show.
Glad to be here.
Glad to have you here. So things have been developing fast, even this morning. We've talked previously about how Donald Trump reacts under pressure, under investigations. You've been watching as things have been developing. What are your initial impressions to how this story has played out?
Well, there's an enormous amount going on. It's almost impossible to keep track of all of it at the moment. But fundamentally, what's happened here is the dam has broken. Donald Trump had built this dam of secrecy, this wall of secrecy. It's now been breached in a significant way. And of course, it isn't tearing babies from their mother's arms. It isn't pouring pollutants into the air and the water or any of the other things Trump has done. It's national security that suddenly has gotten Washington's attention. And Donald is behaving in a frantic manner. He knows that he's in trouble over this, and he's desperately trying to figure out how to discredit everybody, which is what's worked for him in the past.
Yeah. And look, even beyond discrediting, we had the audio yesterday of him talking about either the whistleblower or whoever might have provided information to the whistleblower should be dealt with like we used to deal with spies or something to that effect. What do you think about this turn for Trump?
Well, Donald, you know, is not very smart. He's not educated. And he pulls things up out of his hat. And he clearly has these violence fantasies. You know, he's talked about wiping out all 25 million people in North Korea. He's talked about wiping out everybody who lives in Afghanistan. And so it's kind of not surprising, at least to me, that, you know, he wants to go back to the idea of hanging spies in wartime when they're caught summarily. What's bizarre about this is the whistleblower, whose identity we're going to learn pretty soon, he or she is going to testify. The whistleblower very clearly was someone who was being informed by people right around Donald. They probably didn't know this was coming, but you can see how openly information flows behind that wall about what Trump is doing and how little we've seen so far into that White House. But taking political discussions and putting them onto a server reserved for covert operations that are presidential level is a real good example of how Trump is trying to hide all the bad things he's done.
Yeah. So I'm curious, so far, if you were Rudy Giuliani or Attorney General Barr, how worried would you be about being sucked into this in a way that might be consequential?
Well, they're both going to be sucked into it. In Rudy Giuliani's case, he shot himself in the foot the other day by saying, "I'm not a lawyer here." That means he doesn't have any confidentiality claims at all. I will not be the least bit surprised once we get a new administration if both of these men end up in prison. I mean, let's remember that John Mitchell, who was the attorney general for Richard Nixon, and Kleindienst, one of his other attorney generals, went to prison. And I think Barr here, if the whistleblower complaint stands up, and it seems to be very thoughtfully and carefully written, Barr here may well find himself wearing an orange jumpsuit.
Wow. So I'm curious about what you think about how the different parties in Congress are going to deal with this. So in the past, you've been on the show and we've talked about other scandals that Donald Trump has been involved in. And the thing is that in this investigation, at least the way Nancy Pelosi is talking about it so far, those are not going to be a part of it. This is going to be very narrowly restrained onto the Ukraine issue. What do you think about that as a strategy?
Well, Pelosi is a real general of strategy, and if that's how she decided she wanted to go, that's what's going to happen because she's pretty firmly in control. This is pretty damaging stuff. I have a piece that just went up a few minutes ago at Raw Story and will be at DC Report on Saturday about how the key to impeaching Donald and convicting him lies with Fox News. There are a lot of Republican senators who would vote on this, who would love to get rid of Donald Trump at this point. Scaramucci told the BBC today, I'm in Hamburg, Germany, which is why I saw this, that he believes about 30 Republican senators would vote to convict Trump on an impeachment if they could cast a secret ballot. So how do you open up the opportunity for the Republicans to leave? Fox News. If Rupert Murdoch and his son Lachlan tell Sean Hannity to stop what he's doing and change his course, he will. He's an entertainer. The people on Fox and Friends, they're actors posing as journalists who read the scripts that are given to them. And so Rupert Murdoch and his son Lachlan are in a position here to move all of this. And as soon as one Republican senator comes out in favor of impeachment, others will follow. If you can get two to come out right away, there'll be a very rapid following, and we will see the end of Donald Trump and the 46th president of the United States will be Mike Pence, who has zero chance, I think, of being elected in 2020.
I think that's a pretty appropriate prediction there on Pence's part. You mentioned that you're in Hamburg. You're currently there for the Global Investigative Journalism Conference. A lot of what we found out over the past few years has been not through whistleblowers like in this case, but through the work of investigative journalists like yourself. But we've also seen Donald Trump's strategies for destroying the credibility of the media, or his attempt to at least, spreading to other regimes. What is the feeling amongst the international community of investigative journalists right now?
Well, interestingly, the whistleblower's report specifies and cites the work of the Organized Crime and Corruption Bureau, which is the biggest investigative newsroom in the world. It's got 150 people scattered all over the country. It's a virtual newsroom. There's an awful lot of discussion here and concern about rising authoritarianism, about countries where we could not hold our next biannual conference because they're authoritarian regimes. But the availability of funding for this conference, the amount, the number of people who've come is way up, and it was way up 2 years ago when we met in Johannesburg. So, I mean, overall, I think on a world level, we are seeing dramatic improvements in investigative reporting. When I started out 50 years ago, you were oddballs in the newsroom. Mm-hmm. So things have gotten much better in that sense, Sean.
Okay, well, that's a positive note. So why don't we leave it there? Pulitzer Prize winning investigative journalist, author, editor, and founder as well of DCReport.org that you mentioned earlier, David K. Johnson, always a pleasure talking with you.
Likewise.
And that, unfortunately, is all the time we have for the show. Brett Ehrlich, thank you for helping us close out what has been a pretty busy week.
I'm very grateful for the opportunity to do so. Please watch the damage reports this show. Watch Happy Half Hour tonight, and you'll enjoy it with Jeremy Ray Taylor, our guest.
Exactly, talking about Fortnite, monsters, and eating bugs, which might be in our future.
Yep.
If you're not already at a Climate Strike Rally, go do that. Thank you for watching all this week. We'll see you next Monday. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.